Welcome to Failing Up. We don't have a theme song.
Well, we might not have a theme song, Eden, but we do have a theme, and that is failure.
And we talk to people about their failures and mistakes and how they grew from it.
Simple as that. Listen up. Eric, thank you so much for being here on Failing Up. I should introduce you to the audience, Eric LeGrand. Thank you. A great gift. So, you know, Eric, I'm not sure exactly how we got hooked up. I have kind of an idea. We had a guest on, you know, and this is a spoiler alert for those of you who haven't heard us before, but as part of our show, we always do some sort of charity, right, Ed? And we give some sort of charity away, and I know one of our guests asked us to give to the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation. Do you remember who that was, Eden?
No idea.
But somehow through that, I believe Eric's people found us. And I got an email one day from a young lady who said, I represent Eric LeGrand. He is from Rutgers. And I went, stop right there. I know exactly who Eric LeGrand is. I'm actually a Rutgers graduate, grew up in New Jersey. So, of course, I said, we'd be very honored to have you on the show. And we are. So, Eric, let's talk about a young Eric LeGrand. You grew up in New Jersey.
Yes.
Were you always a sports kid? What were you like?
Yeah, I was. You know, actually, in my neighborhood, I had two kids that were the same age as me, and then there was this one kid, Charlie, who was about 5 years older. This is when I was really young. And he used to always challenge us in games and like basketball and wiffle ball at the time and soccer sometimes. But then one day we played Kill the Man with the ball on the side of my house. And he was destroying my friends, throwing them into the fence, throwing them to the side of the house. But every now and then, I would juke him out and score a touchdown. And he didn't like it, but it was like an adrenaline rush right away. I was so happy that I was the only one to be able to juke him out and score.
And so right there, you said, hey, I got something.
I did. My whole family played sports, and then my friend Doug was one of the kids getting thrown into the fence of the house. His mom was signing him up for football, and my mom was like, I want you to play sports. Do you want to play football? And I was like, absolutely. And the rest is history. I was when I was 5 years old.
So right there, your first foray into sports, into football, you said, that is for me.
Yeah, I did. That adrenaline rush I had at 5 years old, I still remember scoring that touchdown. I was like, this is cool. I'm like, I like this. And then when they told me about football, of course, I watched football on TV and stuff. I'm like, let me try this out. It was funny because I was the big pudgy kid, but I could always run. And after the first day, they put me on the offensive line. But then they saw us do sprints at the end of practice. And I was beating everybody in that flag football at that age. They just put me at the quarterback, and I just ran around the outside for a touchdown almost every play.
Yeah. And then I assume, obviously, then you did Pop Warner. You went to middle school, and you played for. Did you play for your middle school, high school teams?
So I didn't have a middle school team. And Pop Warner went up to eighth grade for us.
Okay.
And from there I went to play for my high school team, Colonia High School. And I remember our freshman year, we had 18 kids on the team, and we dominated somehow. We dominated the freshman league, and then the middle linebacker for our varsity team got hurt with three games left. And they didn't have anybody else, so they brought me up because they saw how well I was doing as a freshman. And had 45 tackles in three games. And Rutgers offered my coach a scholarship, saying that when I'm a junior, we'll be sending Eric LeGrand an official scholarship offer. So,
wow!
Cool. I got offered as a freshman year to play.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, how many people? Yes. How many people did that happen to?
At the time, he said the only other person he did that to was this running back. It was probably the number one running back ever in New Jersey, Sean Moreno. And he played for Middletown South and went on to Georgia. And then he played actually for my favorite team, the Denver Broncos. So, yeah, he said that, Coach Susan said that he was the only other freshman that he ever offered besides me.
Now, when you're a freshman and you get this kind of offer, does that make you, like, try a little less harder? Like, were you a good student?
Oh, no, I was definitely a good student. My GPA in high school was a 2.8. And then I graduated so Robin, with a 3 also. I was always a good student. And I remember that day after that happened, I floated my way back to Spanish class. And I actually stopped playing baseball and basketball after my freshman year, and I focused on football. That's my only regret in high school. I did play all 4 years, but after I got that scholarship offer, I focused everything on football. It was all about the weight room. It was all about me getting better.
But so when you say that's a regret, meaning you would have liked to have played all of the sports for all 4 years?
I do. I wish I did, because once I got to college, you know, I asked my friends, I'm like, did you guys all play, you know, like sports throughout high school? And everybody said, yeah. Everyone played everything. I was like, dang.
Huh.
Kind of wish I did, too. And then my basketball, we were really good at basketball. They won state championship in our counties two out of our 4 years there. And our baseball team was good. My senior year, I was a part of all of that. But I think me lifting and focusing everything on football gave me an advantage to be, you know, when I got to college, to be as strong as I was, and, you know, my quickness as well to adapt to that new level of football.
Cause yeah.
It is definitely a new level.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that. That has to be something, because when you think about it, you know, people don't think about this, but the best player from everybody's high school, that's who, that guy might be the worst player on the football team, right?
Exactly. You get guys in there that are stars in high school that are like, oh my God, look at his highlight team. This guy's a beast. And then he gets to college and it's just like, what happened? Like, the talent, it's the same as everybody else or not. Yeah. As you can just tell that people that were just beastly instead of people that actually worked hard and try to perfect their craft.
It's a little fish in a big pond.
Yeah, exactly. You're a little fish in a big pond, is what Edmund said. Yeah. But when you do get to Rutgers, were you intimidated or were you like, no, I got this?
No, I was a little intimidated because I got my position changed. I was always a linebacker in high school and everything. Then when I get to college, the first day of training camp, I'm 230 pounds, and they tell me I'm playing nose guard. And I'm like, nose guard? I never played it down in my life on a defensive line. I have no idea what's going on. And I got Coach Shiano yelling in my ear at me and all this. I'm like, what is happening with life right now? It's not what I expected at all.
Yeah.
So I had to learn a new position on the fly. Right away, I had to adjust to it, because if I didn't, you know, I was going to get left behind.
For sure. And you know, I got to back up just a second for folks who don't know Rutgers. You know, I'm a guy who went to Rutgers. When I graduated in 98, which means I had terrible football teams, right? My whole career, terrible teams. You actually were part of the Shiano. Like, if you're a Rutgers person, this guy, Greg Shiano, comes. He's a NFL, you know, type coach. And he totally turns Rutgers around and makes it, like, going from the laughing stock to actually being, like, wow, a respectable team that goes to bowls and wins bowl games and stuff. And you got to be part of that. And he actually, I mean, Shiano really believed in you from the beginning.
He really did. Coach Shiano, he came in there with a plan and he turned that whole place around, you know, from being terrible with going from 0-1 to pretty much 0-4. And then switching, being able to get people like Brian Leonard, then Ray Rice, Kenny Britt, the McCourty twins, and, you know, the list goes on. And he would turn players into from boys to men, and also produce and get everyone ready for the next level who had the ability to play in the NFL. I'll never forget Coach Belichick on the New England Patriots said, Devin McCourty is the smartest player he's ever drafted. And that goes to show how much Coach Shiano would prepare us for the NFL.
Yeah. And so, I mean, so you, obviously you credit him a lot, but you also had to prove yourself on the field, and you did. Like, he's the one who switched your position, and you proved him right, in a sense.
Yeah, you know, I learned a lot my freshman year. Definitely did. I played all over the place. I was nose guard and defensive end after an injury, then fullback because our fullbacks weren't producing, back to defensive end, and then at the end of the year, finally back to nose guard. So I had a whirlwind of a freshman year, but then after that, he made the right move because I was able to lift really hard and I mean, gain weight instead of being on the diet my whole life trying to be a linebacker. So it was the right move. And as I got you know, bigger and stronger, I learned the position more. And then my junior year, I finally started to feel comfortable in. I was ready to break out my senior year and really blow up. But unfortunately, you know, October 16, 2010 happened with my injury.
Yeah, well, so let's talk about that. October 16, 2010, you were in a game against Army at MetLife Stadium. So as you have said, it was the one time you were on a professional football field or played on a professional football field. There's a kickoff, and you're going in for this tackle. You're locked in, right? And then somebody else on your team goes in, hits the guy just a little bit, and that's the difference for you, right?
Exactly what it was. I'll paint the scenario again. It was They had just tied the game up 17-17 in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes left. I'm running down on this kickoff, and I'm saying to myself, after I broke through a double team, I get a 30-yard head start this guy. How do I want to make a tackle? Do I want to use my head or do I want to use my shoulder? I said, you know what? I'm going to put my head down and let it go on the side. I'm going to use my shoulder because it's going to be a big impact. Let me leave my head out of this totally. And my teammate, as you said, got there a few seconds before I did, and he tripped the guy up. And when the guy got tripped up, his body twirled in the air. And I'm thinking my head's going to go on the side of his body, and it ended up going right into the back of his shoulder blade, and that's what caused the injury.
And you kind of, I mean, you knew immediately if you watch, I mean, you watch the footage, you see, you tried to get up, you see your head moving, but you can't, you just can't do it. And you can't breathe.
I remember the last thing I remember feeling was my heels hitting the ground. And I tried to get up, and after that, I couldn't move. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't breathe. I felt like I knocked the wind out of myself. So that was my main concern now, trying to be able to breathe. It was very scary. It was the scariest moment of my life. You know, you can't move, you can't breathe, you don't know what's going on. But I might die out there on a football field.
Yeah, and you even said you went for the thumbs up and you couldn't even do that.
Yeah, as I was getting carted off, went to give a thumbs up and there was nothing. And it was pretty terrifying, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, well, it should be terrifying. But here's the thing that I thought was one of the interesting things. You said to ESPN, quote, that's a hit that you are still very proud of.
I am very proud of it because I said it was actually, if you look at it, it was a good hit. And Malcolm, the guy, Malcolm Brown, who I became good friends with, who I hit, he got spun around on the play, and I hit him, and I actually heard that he fractured his collarbone on that play.
So, oh, wow.
You knew it was a big hit. I ended up fracturing my neck. He fractured his collarbone. So, yeah, it was a big collision.
Wow. And you said you still talk to Malcolm Brown. And so, I mean, what's that like? There has to be – was it awkward the first time? What is that like?
Well, he felt bad because, you know, of everything that happened with me, you know, and whatnot. And I told him, listen, man, I'm the one who tackled you. You were just running the ball. Don't feel bad at all. And I think that set him at ease because I remember he wrote me a letter just, you know, feeling so sorry for me. And, you know, just about everything that happened. And I was able to just set him at ease. And we just became good friends after that. And I would say I respect with him and everyone with the Army, Navy, Marines, and what they all do, because they do football for fun and everything. I remember going through football. It wasn't always fun. It was hard work. But at the end of the day, they're there to serve and protect our country. And I'll never forget the text that he sent me back in 2014. That's right after I graduated. He told me that he was in Korea. I believe he was in South Korea at the time. And he said that he uses me as motivation every day after I just graduated, especially to lead troops into battle. I try to use you as motivation and share stories about you with them to motivate them and keep them going. I'm like, this is the real deal. Like, this is the Army of the United States of America. He's talking about using examples of leadership from me. I thought that was pretty cool.
That is very cool. But so let's go a little bit deeper though with that hit. You said you couldn't breathe. You're put on a respirator right away. Doctors say you're going to need a machine to breathe for the rest of your life, and you have a 0-5% chance of walking. The next day, you wake up, you look at your mom, you say, I'll be back.
But I was actually, right before surgery, they let me see my mom before surgery, and I said to her, I'll be back. And she said, whoever sees him from here on out, you can't let him see you upset, don't let him see you down, don't let him see you angry. Whoever goes in that room with him has to be happy and inspirational and be able to lift his spirits. And everybody who came into my room, even the doctors, were just like, hey, E, you're going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. And there you go. Everyone lifted my spirit. It was actually really cool to see other people. It kind of made me forget about my injury at the time because I was seeing so many people that I hadn't seen in years and just catching up with them on life, on what they were doing, you know. And I remember people saying, like, I can't believe he was asking how I was doing. And I was just like, that's who I am. You know, I care about the people that are here in my life. So I was always asking about how everybody else was doing.
That's amazing. And I mean, just the fact that you breathe on your own. You were never supposed to be able to breathe on your own again. But then you said, take me off the respirator. And you started, essentially, I would assume it's a sort of like exercise, right? You have to get yourself back to being able to do it all the way on your own.
Oh, absolutely. And, 5 weeks into my injury, I remember coming up telling the respiratory therapist, please take me off this ventilator. And she goes, you're going to last 1 minute if I take you off. I said, give me that 1 minute. I was trying to go to sleep, actually, because the respirator is making all this noise. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. vomiting. I'm like, I'm trying to sleep. And she took me off, and an hour and a half later, I was still breathing on my own. But I'll tell you what, when she took me off, it felt like I just ran the New York City Marathon. I was like gasping for air, trying to figure out how to do this again. It's crazy how you forget, but then your body somehow remembers. But it felt like I just ran a marathon.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. And I hate to quote people while I'm talking to them, but you did say, quote, it's not even whether you keep breathing, it's whether you keep breathing how you want to breathe, right? It's all about living the life that you want to be able to live.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. You know, I have people ask me all the time, like, how do I do this, how do I do that? But I say, I'm not going to let this wheelchair hold me back. I'm blessed that I have such a great support system that helps me do so many things, and I'm going to lean on them. Like, I was just at a golf, the PGA Tour today. I was just hanging out with Tiger Woods because my friends love golf, and we wanted to go up there and watch that. I go on vacations with my family. You know, I go this place, you know, vacations with my friends, and they lift me up on a plane. They lift me up in the bed. You know, if I have the means to do it like that, you know, and I'm very, like I said, I'm very fortunate. I'm very blessed because people don't have that. But I do have that luxury. I'm going to lean on it and be able to do whatever I can do. And like I said, not let this wheelchair hold me back.
Yeah. I mean, you're a guy that clearly you set your mind to something. You say, I'm going to do it, and you do it.
Yeah, I do that sometimes. It upsets my mom because if I tell her I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it, no matter what it is. So it's kind of funny. That's what I live my life by. If I say I'm going to do something, I try to keep my word on everything.
That's a good way to live.
And yeah, I mean, I've watched some videos of you. I know that you've regained, I mean, this is a while back, you regained movement in your shoulders, right? And some sensation in your body.
Yes, I regained movement in my shoulders. I'm able to lift up my elbow.
Wow.
And move my back, you know, forward and stuff like that. And I did regain some sensation throughout my body. It's very weird because people come up to me and they put their hand on me. You know, like, can you feel this? I'm like, if you push down, I can feel the pressure. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you if it's sharper or dull or hot or cold, but I can feel that there's something pushing on me there.
Interesting. And I mean, I've also watched videos of you literally walking. Like, I mean, obviously you it's aided, it's assisted, but you're going to do it. You are going to walk again.
Yeah, that's a grant from the Chris Mandana Reed Foundation, you know, walking on that No Recovery Network treadmill has been amazing. That's how I've regained back, I believe, so much mobility and stability in my trunk and being able to control myself because of walking on that treadmill. I did over 500 sessions of walking on that treadmill.
Wow.
I'm in a harness and somebody's behind me guiding my hips, and you got two people legitimately walking my legs like I would be walking down the street. Even though I'm not doing it, they're doing it for me. It's just it's crazy how the body remembers and retrains itself to try to work while you're doing that. And that's why that's why I was able to gain back so much stability, being able to hold myself up. And that's why when I sit down now, I got a lot more trunk control than I did before I did that treadmill.
Now, as far as treatments go, are there limits for you? Is there anything you like? Would you want if they can, you know, they have that exoskeleton thing, right? That's coming out. Would you want that?
I would love to. I unfortunately do not have the full ability to walk that because I don't have all trunk control. Usually, they have people that are paraplegics, which means you broke your back, not your neck.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they have those people try out those exoskeletons because they have trunk control.
Right.
Unfortunately, I don't, and I would love to, you know, try those out. But you know, it's 2018. There's going to be a lot more stuff coming out. I always joke around. When I got hurt in 2010, I had the old BlackBerry Curve with the ball falling out of it and everything. I wasn't on Twitter. There was no Instagram, Snapchat. And here we are, 7.5 years later. iPhone X I got. All these different social media platforms and just technology grows each and every day. In this short 7.5 years, who knows what we'll be in another 7.5 years from here. You know, their phones will probably be virtually popping out at us.
It's going to be in our hand. We're going to use our hand.
Just look at your hand. And
yeah.
That sounds good and that sounds bad. There's awful, awful implications on that one. So let's talk about some of the highlights since this has happened. You came back. Sports Illustrated called at the best moment of 2011 when you came back to the Rutgers game against West Virginia. That was amazing. You were awarded the Jimmy Valvano Award, the ESPN Award.
Yeah, that was really cool. Oh, yeah, the Jimmy V SB Award for Perseverance, you know, and to be able to address that crowd on national TV on ABC with, you know, thousands of people there and millions of people watching. I really believe that's when a lot of people knew me before that, but that's really when my story blew up and everyone remembers me from, oh, that's that Rutgers football player. He won the Jimmy V Award. I remember seeing him speak that night. You know, everywhere I go, I get a lot of that. Like, oh, I remember you, blah, blah, blah. So,
that's yeah, that's the big one, huh?
Highlight of my life.
I can imagine. And then I love this. In 2012, thinking that your story was pretty well known, you sent a tweet to Lolo Jones. You want to talk about that?
I did send a tweet to Lolo Jones. I was thinking that she knew who I was. Should have did some research on that first with a better tweet by chat. I think she was talking about, you know, beating a football player in a race and stuff like that. So
yep.
I said, I challenged her. So me. And she came back at me, clapped back like, are you crazy? I'll beat you. You must have a concussion or something. And I felt so bad.
Oh, no.
After she tweeted that, oh, my
God. Oh, boy.
I'll tell you what, Twitter came with my, they got my back. Oh, my
of course,
God.
They always do.
But I felt so bad for her because she didn't know who I was. And she just thought every set of
ignorance is bliss.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers in my profile. So she just, you know, thought I was just a regular football player. So she accepted the challenge. Like, come on, let's do it. And then Twitter had, you know, kind of realized, like, he was paralyzed, blah, blah, blah. And I felt awful because she did not know. And she was just like, oh, my God, like, if she knew, she would never have said anything like that. But she did. And then it was just a big misunderstanding. I put out an apologize to her. Like, if she didn't know who I was, I'm okay. I'm laughing at it, though. You guys got to calm down.
At least you have a sense of humor.
They are ruthless on her right now. Oh, my God.
Well, that is how Twitter operates, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of tough guys behind the keyboard, but it was crazy to see how many people had my back, even though, like I said, it was just a big, big misunderstanding.
But it led to something good, right? Because you guys did participate in a race.
Yes, we did the Wings for Life race down with Red Bull sponsors for spinal cord injuries, because I believe their CEO know somebody or his best friend's daughter has a spinal cord injury, and they're all on board about raising money for spinal cord injuries. And Lolo Jones is a Red Bull athlete, so we started at the starting line, and she took off, and I believe she ran a lot of miles that day before the marker got caught.
Wow.
It was just cool to clear everything up like that.
Yeah, well, that's what we call failing up, right?
Yeah.
You know, a mistake comes in and turns into something wonderful.
Exactly.
So let's talk about some other great stuff. So obviously Rutgers set up a fund for you. It's called the Believe Fund. And the Believe is, EL is capitalized for Eric LeGrand, if you guys couldn't figure that out. One of the cooler things, I think, was when Greg Schiano went over to the Bucks and he signed you for an NFL, with an NFL contract.
That was really cool because that was, you know, my dream come true. When we had a conversation, it was like, no, man, we were just talking about school and life. And then he goes, Eric, I want to sign you as our 90th man on our roster. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, I want you to be a part of the Buccaneers. I'm like, you're going to waste that spot on you. He goes, no, that's not wasting a spot. We want you to be a part of this team, part of this organization.
Oh, wow.
I want the guys to get to know you and stuff like that. And I was just like, you know, thank you. You made my dream come true. Even though I never played it down in the NFL, like I said, I was a part of the NFL team. I was able to go down there for the 2 years that he was there. I retired 3 months later. I signed my retirement papers.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And you know, you just made me think about this. Rutgers also, you're the only player to ever have your number retired, correct?
Yes. Now that, he's shining on the stadium. Oof. Every time I pull up there, that gives me chills.
Yes. And then they said they're going to take that away from you at one point, right?
Well, they said, yeah, the day I walk again, they're going to take it down and everything, but that thing's standing there. It's too nice.
To me, I thought that was, like, one of the cooler things. But here's one of the things that I read this, Eric, and I'm like, really? This is crazy. So since the beginning of 2012, the NFL made a rule with kickoffs that they take place at the 35-yard line instead of the 30-yard line in hopes of reducing the number of injuries. You think the rule should be returned to its previous incarnation?
Well, yes, I said that because, you know, people make a living on special teams in the NFL, especially, you know, those are big-time plays. I know it's very high risk of injury because you got guys running full speed, grown men running full speed into each other, and those collisions sometimes are very bad. Obviously, it happened with me. But, you know, those are big-time plays and game-changing plays. When somebody returns a kickoff for a touchdown, that's a huge momentum swing on kickoff. You get down there, you make a big tackle or something inside the 20-yard line, you get everyone in the stadium and your defense fired up. It's just a huge part of the game. And you know, there's people that still, you know, they still come out, but they moved it up 5 yards. I just hope that they don't take it out completely because, like I said, it's just a huge part of the game, and a lot of people make their money in the NFL off the special teams to be able to have a special craft to be able to do that.
You know, Eric, as you speak, I can just hear in your voice that you're one of those people, like, you really, you love football.
Oh, man, I love football. Yes, I am. I'm an old school type. I love hitting. I love everything about the game, the grind to it, trying to outwork somebody, having that feeling that somebody's outworking you used to kill me. So, oh, man, I do miss the game. I wish, you know, I wish I was still playing. Obviously, you know, I'm doing bigger and better things than just a game of football, but that game has made me into who I am today.
Do you watch a lot of football and feel sad about it that you can't play, or are you genuinely like so in love with football that watching it gives you a thrill too?
Oh, it definitely gives me a thrill. I work on a radio broadcast for Rutgers, and I'm able to do all their home games, and I watch all their away games. I watch football as much as it's on, and it does not bother me. You know, I always say in the beginning of training camp or the beginning of the football season, right in September, I get a little sad that I'm not playing, but it's not because, you know, it's not because of the injury. It's just, dang, I wish I was out then.
Yeah.
I'd love the game of football.
Yeah, yeah.
But now you have been announcing, and that is one of the things you love to do, obviously, as well.
It is. I get to see the game from a different view now, from way up high, and I try to use what I learned from the game of football, and I try to break it down.
That's good.
For people, and tell them exactly what I see out there on the football field that they may not have seen. So
I think as someone who can never play football myself, because I'm not only a woman, I'm a very tiny woman, I think it's always helpful and interesting to see what, you know, as opposed to like just like some kind of snotty commentator who just like, oh, I know football because I've studied it.
Right.
I'd rather have someone that's actually been there on the field and knows it, you know, knows what goes on in the locker room and knows what they're thinking, what's in their heads when they're making all these plays and stuff. So that's great.
Exactly. When I was from my mentor, Chris Carlin, he always tried to tell me, try to bring something special to the table, bring something unique. Tell me something that I don't know or I can't figure out myself, bring some insight like that, and that's what I try to do.
Great.
Would you ever want to be a coach?
No, coaching ain't for me. I like, well, not that level. Too many hours in the coaching world for college and NFL. Maybe Pop Warner or high school, I could do it.
But, yeah.
I think I'm happy doing what I'm doing with the broadcast.
That's good.
Yeah.
I can talk about the game other than people coaching.
And then how do you become a Broncos fan being a Jersey guy?
Oh, when I was a kid watching Terrell Davis, I was like 8 years old, 7, 8 years old, watching him run the ball. And I'm like, ooh, I like him. I'm going to follow this team. And here I am, about to be 28 next weekend. I'm still a diehard Denver Broncos fan.
Wow.
And plus, let's be honest, you know, the Jets have sucked forever. And, you know, the Giants didn't show up too much.
I didn't grow up in a household where I had a bunch of fans. My sister was an Eagles fan, and my mom is just like, whatever. So, hey, it's not like I had, you know, a team that I had to be a fan of. So, that's kind of, I guess, drifted away, and I'm very happy I'm a Broncos fan. I still talk about the Super Bowl. That's now 3 years ago, Super Bowl 50 chance. I don't care.
So, got some questions for you. So, again, as I mentioned, I'm from New Jersey. I was very excited to get the opportunity to speak with you. And I really never ever do this because I've been podcasting too long that I have plenty of questions to ask people. But I said, you know what? This is a special moment. I'm going to ask some people who went to Rutgers and people from New Jersey if they have any questions for Eric. Is it okay if I ask you some fan questions?
Sure.
Okay. What is the most inspiring thing anyone has said to you during your recovery?
Most inspiring thing someone said to me is, I take it because I wrote a book. When people bring up moments from my book, that specific moments that tell them, you know what? If you did this, why can't I do that? You know, I love when I get those types of things when people come up to me about my book and give me specific facts from the book or specific stories that help them in their life. I think those are the ones that touch me the most, honestly.
And you have two books, correct?
It's an adult version and a children's version. So
they're both called Believe.
Believe, My Faith and Tackle That Changed My Life is the adult version, and Believe, The Victorious Story of Eric LeGrand is a children's version. That's from 8 to 11 or 8 to 12, and then the other one is the adult version from 13 up.
Question number two, some of these, you know, these are fan questions. How is it possible, I don't know that you can answer this, Eric, how is it possible for one man to have so much love and compassion? Is that a question?
That's a good one. I guess the way I look at life now, I have a newfound appreciation on everything. The ability to do this or the ability to do that. I always was a good-hearted person. I hate to see people down. I hate to see people thriving, happy, smiling, and feel good around me. I always been like that. And then after this injury, it really opened my eyes to, you know, there's no reason to be down, and you got to be appreciative for the things that you do have and focus on them. And when you do have that focus on them, it brings you up all the time. Like, wow, like I don't really need to be down, and that's why I try to bring that energy around other people.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Yes, I believe that too, that you choose to feel how you are, right? Does religion have any role in the positive attitude that sustains you?
Yeah, I always have a special relationship with God. I do. I always say, you know, he's got my back for everything. I pray every morning, and I pray every night, and, you know, throughout the day, I just know that everything happens for a reason, and that he's up there guiding us all along our journey. We all have our different journeys, and I'm just trying to follow the ones that he has planned for me.
Cool. Okay. So here's a good one, and we didn't even talk about the fact that you are in the WWE Hall of Fame. But the question is, you've had some incredible moments since your injury, such as winning the Jimmy V Award, being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, your return to Rutgers after your injury a year after. What stands out as your most memorable and moving one?
Oh, definitely the day I graduated from Rutgers, was able to give the commencement speech I had back in 2014. You know, when I got hurt, I knew I was going to have to figure out a way to graduate now, because I'm not going to be able to play in the NFL. So I need to get my degree, and it was a lot of hard work. You know, started Skyping in the class that January 2011.
Wow.
Somebody would write notes to me, and then I would have to talk out my 5-page paper through Dragon Natural Speaking, that software. And that was not easy. And, you know, from one class, I started taking 2 to 3 to 4 until I was finally done 4 years later in 2014, and I graduated my degree in labor relations, and I was able to give the commencement speech to that graduating class in front of almost 50,000 people there with their family. So that memory definitely sticks out to me.
Yeah, that is amazing. I mean, just in general, you know, I hire people in my job, and what I always say to people when I say, like, what's the best thing you've ever done? And a lot of people say, graduating college. And I say, you know, it's 100% right in that it's not that hard to get into college, but actually making it through is very difficult. And then the way you just described and how you had to do it, that adds a level of complexity, obviously.
Yeah, it was not, I remember leaving therapy, flying down to catch a class, stuffing a sandwich down my throat from somewhere, and just getting to meet with a tutor on weekends just so I could be all caught up. It wasn't easy, it wasn't always fun, but it was something that I wanted to do and I thought I really needed to do.
On that same topic, you mentioned sandwiches. What's your favorite fat sandwich?
Oh, man, Fat Betty Boy, no marinara with ketchup.
Oh,
you just knew it.
That's a cheeseburger, grilled chicken, french fries, mozzarella sticks. Oh. I don't want the marinara sauce, but ketchup on it, and we are good to go.
Oh, it sounds similar to the Fat Coco, which was my favorite, which was the cheesesteak, I think, with french fries. And
wow.
Yes, so.
It's a lot on the sense.
It's a lot.
These trucks a few weeks ago, and I tore one of them.
I miss them. I actually, the person who asked the question said that theirs was some kind of like vegetarian one. And I'm like, that is not the right answer.
Take that away from me.
No fat sandwich should be vegetarian. Two more fan questions for you. I think we know the answer to this, but what is your view on full contact sports?
Like I said, I love it. I think football teaches you about life, you know, gets you ready for it. The hard things that you got to deal with in life, whether if you have to work as a team, have to go through self-evaluation periods on working to be better than your opponent or working as a team all in one, you got to learn how to handle adversity. If something doesn't go your way, you don't cry about it. You fix it yourself. Stuff like that. The game of football teaches you, and you use that in life. Right. And that's why I said the game of football is maybe into who I am and got me ready for life outside of football.
There you go. Okay, so last question from the fans. You said Stone Cold, The Rock, and Kane are your favorite wrestlers. Three's a crowd. Who's number one?
The Rock is number one because he is the people's champ. Yeah. I saw The Rock is number one. Anytime you listen to The Rock on a mic when he comes out, you never know what he's going to say, and he never doubts it. I'm always sitting there like, all right, what was he going to say? And at the end of it, you're either cracking up laughing or you're ready to punch a hole in the wall because you're so fired up, ready to go. I love listening to The Rock on the microphone. And then when he wrestled, you know, the character that they built him into was just incredible. You know, he had all these actions that he would do with his hands, the people's elbow, people's eyebrow. You know, it just had all, everything was planned out perfect for him. And
we all smelled what The Rock was cooking.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking, that's my guy.
That's awesome. So, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. Obviously, you're doing the broadcast thing. You're an inspirational speaker.
Yes. That's a big thing I'm really focusing on with my inspirational speaker. I love being a motivational speaker. I love being able to go into a room and share my story and change people's lives by them hearing me live. You know, that's something I really want to focus on and build my career on more. And I love this sports broadcast, and I do. But motivational speaking is really passionate to me. And I've been working with Eric Thomas and a lot of his teachers, a lot of people in his program just to get better, be able to share my story in different ways and have different expressions. And it's been great. I have a few speaking engagements coming up, and I'm really looking forward to using some of the stuff I learned in his class.
The Wednesday after we speak, you're delivering a commencement speech for the Advantage Career Institute Medical and Dental School graduation ceremony. The next day, you're going to be at the NASDAQ for a series of interviews at Times Square. And then a few days later, you're going to be presenting to the faculty of the South Bergen Jointure Commission. Like
somebody was just on my website. I like it.
Who you? You're a busy man, though. I mean, you got some stuff going on.
You sound way busier than me.
And that's why I think with the graduation speech, it's a little bit different than just, you know, me telling my story. So I'm looking forward to, you know, talking about these kids that are going out. Well, not even just some adults in there as well. Some people that are going out to the real world and just, you know, being prepared for the real world and not letting things hold you back, or if you fail, you know, just keep on trying. So I'm really looking forward to using some examples that I have in my story about failing and never giving up. And then, as you said, I got to put it down. I'm really looking forward to that. You know, get to talk about some investments and learn from the best people there and be in the middle of Times Square. That's going to be cool. And then from there, speaking at another school, I believe, this is the teachers before the students come. So I got to pump up the teachers and get them ready to teach for this year, those days that they got to work with the kids. So I'm looking forward to that. It's all coming to be in the next week.
Awesome. Well, so I'm going to ask you our famous last question. I think I know the answer. We're going to put a little spin on this. Eden, I didn't even talk to you about this.
Okay.
We always ask our guests what their favorite charity is. I have to guess. Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, correct?
Yep. I'm going to even go better. It's mine. I'm at Team LeGrand of the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation. That's my fundraising branch off of them. And we'll brag a little bit. We opened up in the fall of 2013, and this past winter of 2017 going into 2018, we crossed $1 million mark to raise for our spinal cord injury research. And this year, we're going to be well over $250,000 to raise this year as well. So
cool.
I'm excited, and we're keeping on going.
Well, so we're going to give $100 to Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, and then Eden and I are both becoming Team LeGrand members, $52 each. That's at teamlegrand.org. All of those links will be in the show bio, so take a look. You can also donate yourself and become part of Team LeGrand. $52, you could do it. And you get some stuff for it, right? You get like a t-shirt and good stuff like that. So
that's awesome, man. I really appreciate that, guys. That means a lot to me. Yes, you do get a t-shirt and a wristband, so I do appreciate you guys joining on the team.
We appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing the show, Eric. What people don't know behind the scenes is we had some technical difficulties to start, and you've been a gentleman. And so thank you so much for being on Failing Up, and best of luck to you.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Eric.